From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
Good morning, America. How are you? This is Dale Thronberry. I'll be your host this morning on Veterans Radio. And joining me in the control room is Ken Rogie. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning on a chilly Saturday morning here in Ann Arbor.
I agree. It looks like winter is on its way, and I'm not going to be able to stop it.
Don't say that. Don't say that. We don't use those six-letter words in this show.
That's true. Yeah, we don't want it. We don't want the FCC coming down on us for that one.
It was 39 degrees this morning.
Wow.
And it's but it is still September. It's not supposed to be that way.
I understand. Well, we're just going to. This program is called Shout Out, and the idea is to sound off about what is bothering you. We're going to be talking about General Petraeus' testimony before Congress this last week and the President's speech on Thursday night. A couple of other things. We're coming to you live from the studios of Ave Maria Radio here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we want you to participate today. So we're challenging you. This is your show. We're not going to have any experts on. It's just you, Ken, and myself. And we're going to be discussing what's going on in the world that affects veterans. It affects our population. And it could be about Iraq. It could be about the VA. It could be about pretty much anything. It's your call. The number to call, as a matter of fact, is 877-573-7825. Again, that's 877-573-7825. And we're not going to screen these calls. All we're going to do is ask, you know, what your name is and where you're calling from, and then we just go from there, correct?
Yes, and watch the language.
Well, yes. Well, we understand that.
Yeah.
That's another reason. We don't want the FCC to look at that one either.
Yeah.
There is some news in the world that we're going to start off with, and Ken, you're on.
Yeah, thanks. There was a rumor last weekend that the Vietnam Memorial had been defaced, and there was quite an uproar in the Vietnam veterans community. Well, I got an email here from Steve Cobb, who is with Region 1 of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and he said, "After several attempts, I was able to contact Sergeant Booker of the National Park Service to check on the facts about the defacement of the Vietnam Wall last weekend. He explained it was a cleaning accident by a park ranger and not a defacement, as was originally reported. The National Park Service is regarding this as an accident and not an act of vandalism or terrorism. They're going to check these things further in the future, and they said any future report of attempted or actual vandalism will be verified with the National Park Service in advance, even if that means a significant delay in reporting the incident."
What in the world were they cleaning it with?
I don't know, but the original report said that someone had gone along the wall with some kind of caustic liquid and sprayed it across the bottom and had taken the letters off of the bottom couple of rows of names on the monument. And stained the marble face, but evidently it was just a cleaning error. But I don't know what he used. It must have been something pretty potent.
I would think so.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's some sort of weed killer or something that was down there. What they were doing?
I don't know, but I don't want him to use it in my bathwater.
No, I don't. And also, we can call all the people off that were getting all upset.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it will all be taken care of. Thanks for checking that out.
Yeah. And the Democrats are pushing a new tactic to shift the Iraq policy, Iraq plan. They said that now that the president and General Petraeus, we're going to talk about him,
yes,
have charted their course for the Iraq war, Democrats are saying that one of their proposals aimed at shifting the president's strategy is finally close to winning enough Republican support for a real chance of being approved. It would require that troops spend as much time at home as on their most recent tours overseas before being redeployed. The proposal by Senator Jim Webb from Virginia has strong support from top Democrats, who say that the practical effect would be to add time between deployments and force General Petraeus to withdraw troops on a substantially swifter timeline than the one he'd laid out before Congress this week, and that it would protect troops from serving protracted and debilitating deployments. Senator Biden, a Democrat from Delaware, called the proposal the easiest way for his Republican colleagues to change the war strategy on the same day that the Bush administration released a mixed report on the Iraq government's progress toward various goals. And the president's plan, and supported by General Petraeus, would reduce the number of combat brigades from 20 to 15 by mid-2008. Now, brigade is about 4,000 troops. So they're gonna bring down about 20,000 troops by mid-July.
This is a question that we will be discussing after our first break, of course.
Oh, will we? Oh.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that amazing? How timely.
Yes. Jeff Morrell, the Pentagon press secretary, said that because the Webb proposal would apply to individual soldiers, not just units, the Pentagon would be forced to examine the deployment history of every soldier to ensure that each had been home long enough. That would force units with some soldiers who meet the timeline and others who did not to be broken up, harming combat effectiveness, he said. Current Pentagon policy calls for active duty Army units to get a year at home for every 15 months deployed. Individual soldiers, because they might have been transferred from other units, could be sent back on a faster timetable. Even without the Webb Amendment, Army officials have said that they would have difficulty meeting current policy. I think that would make it very difficult to try to manage the forces if you're going to do it on an individual basis.
I think it would be a difficult objective to put a political solution to a military problem.
We did that in Vietnam, though.
Can see how effective it was there, too.
but it was a little different situation because you didn't have... once the war got started, you didn't have whole units going in and whole units coming out.
No, I don't know how they would have done that. Plus, you didn't have a volunteer army. You had people getting out.
Right.
You know, the draftees, they were just doing their 2 years and getting out.
And
many other people were just doing their enlistments and getting out, and that was it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think it would present a real big problem for the military to try and stay on a schedule along those lines.
Yeah, it would just make it a managerial nightmare.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Next, which do you want to do now? Do you want to do Welcome Home?
Let's go ahead and do Welcome Home.
Okay, you're on.
Okay. Welcome Home. Each week on Veterans Radio, we welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of our country. On the 7th of September, soldiers from C Battery, 213th Air Defense Artillery, returned home to family and friends in Spring City Armory in Spring City, Pennsylvania. Troops from the 324th Military Police Battalion were greeted by friends and family members in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. On Tuesday, the September 11th, Master Corporal Stephen Rose, Master Corporal, Canadian Forces, was welcomed home in Newfoundland, Canada. Hundreds of family members and friends welcomed home soldiers from the 105th Engineer Group of the North Carolina Army National Guard on September 8th. In Winston-Salem, North Carolina. 260 soldiers of Hawaii's 25th Combat Aviation Brigade returned home to a welcome home celebration at Wheeler Army Airfield in Hawaii on September 2007. And the Patriot Guard welcomed home U.S. Marine Corporal Taylor Sneed on Saturday, September 8th at the Kansas City International Airport. A welcome home celebration was held at Vail Vista Community Center in California for their military personnel coming home, and soldiers from the 863rd Battalion returned home to Chicago, Illinois on Monday, September 10th. Troops from the 370th Transportation Detachment were greeted by friends and family at the Corpus Christi International Airport on September 8th, and Army Specialist Matt DeHaan from the 45th Quartermaster Company was welcomed home on Saturday, September 8th, in Quinton Township, New Jersey. A welcome home was held for injured soldiers on Friday, September 7th. A train carrying the injured soldiers from Irwin Army Community Hospital arrived in Whitewater, Kansas. Vietnam and Iraq War veteran Rod Kreps was honored in a welcome home celebration on Saturday, September 8th, in Minnesota. And on Saturday, September 8th, Senior Master Sergeant John Wilson from the California Air National Guard 129th Rescue Wing, was welcomed home in Cirrus, California. 140 Army reservists from the 85th Division were honored in a Welcome Home Warrior Citizens Awards Recognition Program on Saturday, September 8th. The unit is based in Arlington Heights, Illinois. 17 soldiers from the Pennsylvania Army National Guard's 213th Air Defense Artillery Battalion returned home to the Layton Armory in Pennsylvania on September 7th. And in other news, this is not a welcome home, but I think it's very interesting. Eagle Summit Ranch in Colorado is a place of recuperation for wounded soldiers. The opening ceremony was held by Dr. Dave Rover, a Vietnam veteran who was horrifically burned and disfigured during the war. Welcome Home is sponsored by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. Visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. Welcome home. United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
How many of you are suffering from some kind of chronic pain? If you are, then you're just one of millions of people our age who just live with it. I strongly suggest that you give Quantum Physical Therapy a call at 734-483-9200. Quantum Physical Therapy is a multifaceted facility providing cutting-edge conventional and alternative rehabilitation services. The highly qualified and friendly staff at Quantum are the movement experts and are committed to coming up with a specific solution for your specific problem. Whether it's pain, weakness, swelling, nerve injury, amputation, disease, or age-related morbidity, they can help you lead a productive life. Quantum Physical Therapy has two locations, one at 5417 Whittaker Road in Ypsilanti, and the other at 6180 Michigan Avenue in Saline. That's Quantum Physical Therapy, 734-483-9200, or on the web at www.qptherapy.com. And we're back on Veterans Radio, coming to you from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And this is a sound-off program. We're talking about the war in Iraq, and we'd like to have your opinion and your questions and your concerns. Give us a call at 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825.
And the lines are open.
The lines are open, yes. Yes, they are. We've been doing our Welcome Home segment for almost the 4 years that we've been on the radio, and the Welcome Home segment has been put together by Ingrid Weber, and I just wanted to thank Ingrid for all the things that she has done for us over the last 4 years, because I got an email from Ingrid stating that she probably wouldn't be able to help us out much longer. So we're looking for a volunteer who would like to help with the Welcome Home segment. It takes a lot of work to go out and find all those people when they're coming home. It doesn't seem like the press likes to cover them as much as we would like them to do so. So if you'd like to help us out, contact us at Veterans Radio, and we'll be more than happy to tell you how the process that we go through to find all these Welcome Home people. We think it's a good segment.
Amen.
Amen.
And,
that's right.
And Ingrid has been with us for about 3 years, I believe.
Right.
And we miss her. She used to be our technical director, keeping us on track and making sure we had all the elements we needed, and we miss her.
We do. And she was not a veteran. She was just a volunteer, which is even better. But very dedicated. But she got a job where she works now on Saturday mornings, and it's just becoming more difficult for her to do this segment of the program. All right. Monday, General David Petraeus sat down before the House of Representatives and told them what he thought the progress was on the war in Iraq. And I just want to read a little bit from his statement here. It says, at the outset, I would like to note that this is my testimony, meaning General Petraeus's. Although I have briefed my assessment and recommendations to my chain of command, I wrote this testimony myself. It has not been cleared by nor shared with anyone in the Pentagon, the White House, or the Congress until it was just handed out. As a bottom line up front, the military objectives of the surge are, in large measure, being met. In recent months, in the face of tough enemies in the brutal summer heat of Iraq, coalition and Iraqi security forces have achieved progress in the security arena. Though the improvements have been uneven across Iraq, the overall number of security incidents in Iraq has declined in 8 of the past 12 weeks, with the number of incidents in the last 2 weeks at the lowest level seen since June of 2006. One reason for the decline in incident is that coalition and Iraqi forces have dealt significant blows to Al-Qaeda Iraq. Though Al-Qaeda and its affiliates remain dangerous, we have taken away a number of their sanctuaries and gained the initiative in many areas. We have also disrupted Shiite militia extremists, capturing the head and numerous other leaders of the Iranian-supported special groups, along with the senior Lebanese Hezbollah operatives supporting Iran's activities in Iraq. Coalition and Iraqi operations have helped reduce ethno-sectarian violence as well, bringing down the number of ethno-sectarian deaths substantially in Baghdad and across Iraq since the height of the sectarian violence last December. The number of overall civilian deaths has also declined during this period, although the numbers in each area are still at troubling levels. Iraqi security forces have also continued to grow and to shoulder more of the load, albeit slowly and amid continuing concerns about the sectarian tendencies of some elements in their ranks. In general, however, Iraqi elements have been standing and fighting and sustaining tough losses, and they have taken the lead in operations in many areas. Additionally, in what may be the most significant development in the past 8 months, the tribal rejection of Al-Qaeda that started in Anbar province and helped produce such significant change there has now spread to a number of other locations as well. Based on all this, and in the further progress we believe we can achieve over the next few months, I believe that we will be able to reduce our forces to the pre-surge level of brigade combat teams by next summer without jeopardizing the security gains that we have fought so hard to achieve. That's just kind of a brief overview of what the general had to say. I don't know. What do you think out there? Is it working? Is it not working? Is it time for a change? If you don't tell me, I'll tell you what I think. Give us a call at 877-573-7825.
I thought it was interesting the way he held himself. At the very beginning, the members of Congress were attacking him, and he sat there very stoically and didn't show any emotion. I don't want to play poker with the man.
No, I wouldn't either. It's also nice the way they have the whole thing set up and the microphones don't work, although we can relate to that one.
No, we never have a glitches,
never
do
had
we?
A problem along
no.
those lines. I do think it's rather interesting, though, and this is one way we can get it started, is that some people on the left of the political aisle started by questioning the accuracy and the trustworthiness of his testimony even before he started. And I think that was really totally unnecessary. The idea of attacking this man who not only has been in the military for 30 years, is probably one of the most intelligent leaders that have been involved in the Iraq conflict since the beginning. I mean, the man has a PhD from Princeton. He's had plenty of experience. He was fairly successful in his first tour in Iraq, and he somewhat spoke out against what the administration was doing and ended up training troops out in the middle of Kansas for a while. And, you know, then we can look at the other political side where, you know, his editorial to the New York Times just before the last election or before the presidential election. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's a very interesting man. He really is. And you're right. He's highly intelligent. And you could hear that in his presentation, how he formulated his thoughts when he was going through the testimony.
Well, I think, again, it's interesting that he did not. One comment that I read about was the introduction to his testimony was that I wrote this myself. It has not been cleared by nor shared by anyone in the Pentagon, White House, and Congress until it was just handed out. I kind of wonder about that one.
Why? Why do you wonder about that?
Because this administration has been known to micromanage everything.
Oh, that's true. That's
and
true. They
the
have.
Idea that he could give this testimony without anybody in the White House or, you know, in the Pentagon seeing this is a little bit unusual, I think.
I would guess that probably what happened was that he gave them an idea of what he was going to say.
I'm sure he sent over.
They said on the radio the other day, I heard that he talks to the president 3 to 5 times a week, and he talks to the Pentagon daily. So, I mean, I'm sure that somewhere along the line somebody said, well, so, David, what are you going to say? Mm-hmm. And he's going to tell him, well, here's what I'm going to say, but maybe not the specific words, you know.
Well, I don't know. It was very interesting to see some of the things that were being written in newspapers around the country as to, you know, in anticipation of what he was going to say. It's like everybody had already formed their own opinions, and some organizations started questioning his truthfulness before he even gave it. And I don't agree with that at all.
I don't either. What really upset me was the ad that was taken out in the paper that called him General Betray Us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was MoveOn.org.
Yeah, and that to me is horrible. That is just absolutely horrible.
Well, you know, it's a free country. We can do and say whatever we want, and we know that we've had examples of that from the other side as well. And, you know, just kind of keep it clean, guys. I think the thing that many people don't understand, and you know, it's so difficult, I think, when you're in the military to also be political. And I understand that as a general, you probably have to be more political than somebody down in the lower ranks. But it's still that he looks at his job. I thought one of the interesting things was somebody asked him, one of the congressmen, senators, said, you know, well, are we safer now than we were? And he, you know, here mm-hmm. than we were there. And he goes, I don't. That's not my responsibility.
And he said, "I don't have the background on that."
Right. His job is to take care of what's going on in Iraq. Obviously, he's going to be concerned about what happens here, but that's not his job.
Mm-hmm.
His job is to, you know, to take care of the business in Iraq. To calm everything down. The whole purpose behind this surge was to give the Iraqi parliament and the Iraqi military the time to take over themselves. Now, whether they are doing that or not, there are a wide variety of opinions out there.
No. Really?
Well, yeah, sure. I'd like to hear one, too. again, before we get into ours, because I'm going to start reading stuff that will really irritate some people here.
I've been following this thing, you know, being military background, I'm very interested in what's going on over there. But it appears to me that there have been some gains. But I'm curious now what's going to happen now that Sheikh was killed this past week in Anbar province.
Right.
Because he was the one that was bringing Anbar province together. And,
right.
What's going to happen now? I've got a feeling. Everybody says, well, no, the insurgents are going to now take over that province. I don't think so. I think the people and his followers are going to be so incensed over his assassination that Anbar province is going to be the safest place in Iraq.
Yeah, but it may only be Sunni. It's not nobody else will be allowed in there, which is one of the problems that seems to be going on, is that the sectarian violence is dividing the country up into these little enclaves. There was an article obviously about the Sheikh's killing the other day, and it says that al-Qaeda in Iraq is claiming responsibility for his killing, and I'm probably going to unfortunately mess up his name here. Abdul Sadar Abu Rishah was the Sheikh that had really started up the anti-insurgent movement in Anbar province. And I think it really just came to the idea is that they would much rather have the Americans there than the Shia militias coming through and setting up what's happening and, imposing their own, their own version of what they think that Iraq should be.
Mm-hmm.
But it did point out that his brother is going to take over. And has vowed, he said, we will continue the march of Abu Rishah. We will find his killers. In his first public remark since assuming leadership of the council, Ahmad Abu Rishah said he would honor his brother's memory by pursuing his assassins. We will have revenge against anyone who claims responsibility for this operation. We will follow him wherever he goes.
Oh, good.
So, you know, it's not going to go away. And I think, as you said, they found it to be more successful because of a lot of the mistrust in between the various sections of Iraq, that if they don't take care of themselves, that they sometimes have the feeling that no one will.
Joe Biden has had an interesting proposal earlier this year. He suggested that we create three independent states under a federal government over there. And I think that's got some reasonable
What are you going to do? You're going to have Kurdistan, you're going to have a Shia part of the country, and you're going to have a Sunni part of the country. And it's still the one of the points that they're having such difficulty with now is sharing the oil revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sunnis, because the Sunnis were in control for so long under Saddam, and nobody trusts them.
Right.
And the Sunnis, of course, don't trust anybody else because they know that there's probably a fairly good revenge factor going on there.
Yes.
And, you did it to us, so we're going to do it to you. I don't know. It sounds like the Kurds have got it pretty much figured out. Right now, according to the news reports I've been reading, they've got a pretty good democracy going up there.
And they're acting autonomously.
Right. Because they don't necessarily want to trust anybody, out there.
And they want to be an independent country.
They do. Turkey's not real pleased with that.
No, they would not be.
Because there are other issues going on up there with the Kurds in Turkey and so forth. But it's interesting to see. I mean, we have to remember that Iraq was a country that was invented by the West, after World War I.
By the British.
Yes, the former Ottoman Empire. And they said, okay, we're going to make a country here, and you three groups, have to get along.
Mm-hmm.
And they had tried that in other parts of the world. Didn't necessarily work too well either.
No, but the Brits ruled that country for a number of years.
Right.
And then when they pulled out, it was they had their favorite that they put in power, and mm-hmm. he ran the country for a number of years. I can't remember his name. And then Saddam Hussein, of course, took over 30 years ago, and ruthlessly took over.
Well, I talked about this. I was on another program yesterday in the area, and we were talking about that. That American foreign policy is all over the place. Because we always seem to play by the idea of the enemy of our enemy is our friend,
mm-hmm.
and then we end up getting burned on that. And I'm hoping that, again, out there, if you have any questions or comments out there, give us a call, 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. And because of that seeming policy that we have, we continually get ourselves into difficulty. We keep moving along, saying that we support this person, and then we're supporting a dictator because it's convenient for our necessary or for our policy, and see how we can get that satisfied.
Well, we've done that before.
Yeah.
In fact, we supported Saddam Hussein when he first came to power because we were having a problem with Iran. And the old saying, just like you said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And he was the enemy of Iran, and that was made him our friend. And we supported him with arms and munitions and all kinds of things.
Well, one of the concerns right now is that we are supplying arms to all of these various groups out there, and that that might be coming back to haunt us, because the Sunnis obviously were not our friends when we first got started in Iraq, and now we're letting them basically take over and control their own areas, and it looks like policy is going from the bottom up instead of from the top down as we go along, and I think it'd be very interesting to see how that plays out. Because if we were arming these bad guys, or that we thought were bad guys, and then we, see what happens. I don't know. Yes, sir. Okay, we're coming up to our break at the bottom of the hour. Again, we're talking about the Iraq War. We want you to sound off. We want to get your opinion. Tell us what you're upset about. Are you upset with Iraq? Are you upset with the president? Are you upset with the military? Are you upset with the VA? Are you upset with whatever's going on in your house? I don't know, but give us a call, and we'll be more than happy to talk about it with you. We're listening to Veterans Radio. Give us a call, 877-573-7825. And we'll be back right after this message. We're going to be looking at our Medal of Honor recipient for this week.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
U.S. Navy Landsman John Lawson continued to man his gun in spite of being wounded. Details after this.
I am a United States sailor.
I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, and I will obey the orders of those appointed over me.
I represent the fighting spirit of the Navy and those who have gone before me to defend freedom and democracy around the world.
I proudly serve my country's Navy combat team with honor, courage, and commitment. I am committed to excellence and the fair treatment of all.
I am a United States sailor.
Lawson was on board the flagship USS Hartford during the successful attacks against Fort Morgan, rebel gunboats, and the ram Tennessee in Mobile Bay on 5th of August, 1864. Wounded in the leg and thrown violently against the side of the ship when an enemy shell killed or wounded the six-man crew, Lawson, upon regaining his composure, promptly returned to his station, and although urged to go below for treatment, steadfastly continued his duties throughout the remainder of the action.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Len Pitlack, CPA, is an award-winning consultant for the U.S. Small Business Development Center. Let him use his 25 years' experience to bring you, as an individual or small business owner, his professional and courteous tax and accounting services. Give Len Pitlack a call today at 734-993-1313.
Pat the Handyman and his team is ready to help you with your remodeling, repair, and painting projects. Call Pat the Handyman at 734-260-1158. That's 260-1158. Pat the Handyman is a veteran-owned business.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we're sounding off today about what's going on in Iraq, General Petraeus' testimony, the president's speech on Thursday night. What do you think? We've got a couple of callers on the line, and first up is Gary calling from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning. I didn't get to see the president's speech, and I saw just a bit of General Petraeus's, but what most impressed me was the rude reception that he received, and being accused of being a liar before he ever had a chance to talk. And I don't think that's healthy for the country. I got a lot of respect for General Petraeus, and he's earned that respect. But the things that I did hear him say were logical and weren't painting a rosy picture or whitewashing anything. I thought it was a pretty straightforward report, and I'm very offended at the reception that he received and being called a liar.
Well, I have to agree with you on that. Does that make any difference where you stand politically? You know, this man is coming in before Congress and is an honorable man and really has no reason to fabricate information. I mean, you know, you can embellish it a little bit as you go along, but I thought his testimony seemed fairly honest.
And you talk about the pot calling the kettle black. My Lord, you know, I wish I had as much respect and they had as much credibility in Congress as General Petraeus has. So that's my comments on it.
Well, I agree. Thanks, Gary, for calling.
Sure.
Well, what do you think? What do you think of the treatment of General Petraeus? What's going on out there where people can start, you know, can call the military people liars before they even get a chance to open their mouths and tell what's going on? I think it's very important that we respect the messenger in this particular case. You know, the message may not be what we want to hear, but the messenger has paid his dues, and I think he should be given the respect he deserves. Yes, sir. Okay, we've got another caller on the line. I've got Terry from Ypsilanti. Terry, are you there? I guess not. All right, let's try. We have Lenny calling. Lenny, are you there? I have no one on the phone right now, so who have I got? I hear a voice, but I can barely hear it. Okay, I don't want to have any. We can't have dead air time here, so we'll just keep talking. Who have we got on? Hi, who am I talking with?
Hi, this is Terry.
Hi, Terry. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, I really respect General Petraeus, although I'm not a supporter of the war. But I especially don't like the fact that Congress set a lousy example for our youth with the way they showed a tremendous disrespect for a man in General Petraeus' position. And I hope some people remember that in the next election, but I doubt if the Democrats will, because they'll still just believe that he was a lackey, you know, for President Bush. The thing that bothers me right now is the fact that the focus is all still on Iraq, and I kind of wish it was more that the military could put more emphasis on Afghanistan. I still think it's vitally important that we get Osama bin Laden. I don't care how, but we got to capture that guy or have him deceased because of all the influence that he has in the media, and every time he reappears, even with his beard dyed. I think it's vitally important, and for our national security and things like that. And I think we need to kind of reevaluate and refocus where we're going.
Well, I have a tendency to agree with you, Terry, and thank you very much for giving us a call. You feel better?
Yep, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, who have I got now?
Lenny.
Oh, hi, Lenny, and you're calling from Panama?
Yeah, that's correct.
What's your comment?
Yeah, I've been listening to your dialogue, and I really appreciate the other side of the story. I agree with your last caller, Congress. Our Congress seems to have abducted our liberties by taking liberties themselves. But my question is considering how this is really a war called a jihad for both the terrorists and now for, you know, Iraqis' new forces that are fighting the terrorists, it's a jihad war for them also. But I was wondering if maybe you all might consider what isn't talked about is that as Christians, can we be correct to support this war because how it indirectly comes to aid to Israel's defense through our military intervention, which seems to be a sideline about this. And I think we're Israel's only friend over there, and I think Israel's future might be something pointed towards what the world might consider as safety for the world, too. And that's sort of my common question.
Well, it probably is a very important issue. I mean, we have defended Israel ever since, you know, we felt that it had a right to exist. And, you know, we've run into some difficulty along those lines. I appreciate you very much. Are you calling from Panama, Panama?
Yeah, Panama, Panama, where the canal zone used to be, the Panama Canal.
Oh, right. That's great. Are you listening on the Internet?
Yeah, I'm on Internet radio. It's a voice over Internet telephone.
Oh, that's terrific. We appreciate your call. Thank you very much, Lenny.
Thank you for your show. Bye now.
Thank you. Hi, Tom from Detroit.
Good morning.
How are you?
You know, I'm having a good day. I'm glad you mentioned this topic because I'd like to discuss some of these issues with most of my friends. And being a Catholic, they think, well, you should be, you know, a pacifist. And I don't really think they contradict, but I'm glad that this is a topic that we can discuss because it's important. I think it's not only important for our national defense, but I think there's a lot of faith issues involved, too. But I mean, the first question I got is the extent of our military involvement there. you know, these conflicting figures really got me confused. I mean, I know we got quite a few fellas there, and I wonder really how many troops we got there now, and who are they fighting? I mean, are they fighting a standing army? Is it all guerrilla warfare? I mean, how many of our guys are really engaged in fighting? I mean, that's the first thing I'd like to have you answer, then I'd like to say something after you, if you can answer that for me first.
Well, again, we have no experts on our show right now, but I think from the reading that I've done with 130,000 people on the ground inside of Iraq, I think that they are according to what I've read, is that they are in more constant combat than any group of military personnel, even World War II. I mean, they've had more incidents of firefights and so forth themselves, so I think that puts an ungodly amount of stress upon them. One of the other things, of course, is that you don't know who the bad guys are, because everyone, this sounds very not very good, but they all look alike in this particular case, and you can't tell the good guys from the bad guys.
Well, they also dress the same.
Right. It's a similar
past wars,
experience.
You had uniforms that the guys would wear.
Yeah, so. I don't think that there's any real standing army over there. I mean, although sometimes we are led to believe that there are many, you know, troops coming in from outside of Iraq, but again, they don't wear red and we wear blue type of thing. So, I mean, that's almost impossible. It's a total insurgent guerrilla type warfare.
Well, that leads to my comment. I've done quite a bit of reading, and the Economist magazine from London's got some good facts, and one of them was that it takes either, I think it's about $1 million or $200,000 or $2 million per day to fund Al-Qaeda, which is a considerable sum. And they also showed bank records through Al-Qaeda is that every Middle Eastern country is contributing millions of dollars a year to support Al-Qaeda. So it leads me to believe that we've got to extend this. I mean, if we only fight in Iraq and Afghanistan, you still got the rest of the Arab countries that are all, one way or another, supporting Al-Qaeda. And, you know, we're really fighting a hidden enemy, and I think the president's trying to be nice and political about it, but Islam in all those countries are supporting jihad against us. It's just that if, you know, we can do their dirty work and eliminate their enemy, you know, they'll mouth a few words of support to us. But in my mind, Islam is the enemy because they're killing Christians. I've had priest friends over there. They couldn't wear a cross. You can't offer the sacrifice of the mass. You can't proselytize. You're thrown in jail. You know, that's what's your take on that angle of it?
Well, I obviously there is no religious freedom there. One of the things that they tried to put into their constitution was the idea of allowing religious freedom for the various sects to practice Islam in whatever method that they wanted to. Obviously, again, I'm not an expert on Islam, but I think that they were trying to do that. And we're going to I need to cut you off because we've got another call coming in. But I think it's a valid issue that you mentioned, that it is a religious war. Again, in that area of the world. And I want to thank you very much for calling Veterans Radio. Thank you, sir. And so, yeah, Ken, I think it is important. We lost that one. All right. Give us a call, 877-573-7825. We've heard some pretty good ideas out there, some concerns, and I think it's valuable that we are able to get those off our chests sometimes.
And it's good to hear the different viewpoints, but you know, you could take any stance you want on this war, and there's going to be opposing views.
Well, of course it is.
It makes no difference what your position is.
Right, and whether you're a veteran or whether you're a Catholic, a Baptist, whatever it happens to be, somebody asked me this yesterday. They said, you know, well, how do veterans feel on this? And I said, I can't speak for, you know, there's no one voice for all the veterans out there. We're just like the population. We agree, we disagree. The only difference is that when we disagree, we don't get into a war over it with each other. So we're coming up on a break here, and when we come back, I want to make sure that you give us a call here at 877-573-7825. What's your question? What's your concern? What are you upset about? Did General Petraeus testimony upset you? Did the reaction of Congress, how did you feel about that one? I was a little upset by that. There was a comment here in a Shreveport News of Louisiana that just says that that he's a general. He's a general officer, a man of honor, and to personally attack him before he even had a chance to present his observation is awful close to shameful. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Gary Lilly & Associates is now Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates, the newest Michigan affiliate of a leader in the commercial real estate industry, Sperry Van Ness. More than 800 Sperry Van Ness advisors in 136 markets sold nearly $11 billion in commercial real estate last year. That was done by putting the client's interest first, thereby generating maximum return for every property. When we list a property, we immediately place it on 6 internet commercial listing services and email it to 40,000 prospective buyers and 60,000 commercial brokers. We offer to split the commission 50-50. That means your interests, not ours, are placed first. To learn more, call Sperry Van Ness Lilly & Associates Commercial Realtors at 800-345-6694. That's 800-345-6694. Be advised, there is a difference.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. This is great. We got Ken's jumping around the control room, answering the phone, trying to push all the buttons and get everybody on. So we want to give you an opportunity to get your opinion out there. So give us a call at 877-573-7825. And I've got EJ calling from Naples, Florida. EJ, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
The reason that I'm calling is a little while ago, the comments were made that the three-state option for Iraq might be a viable alternative. And I believe the comment was made that the Turks are not too happy with the fact that the Kurds might have an independent state. And I would be very interested in your comments on what the issues are between the Turks and the Kurds.
Boy, you know, EJ, I wish I could answer your question right off the top of my head. I know that there has been issues in, I believe it's southern Turkey, with the Kurds, the religious group of the Kurds, that's a little bit different from the way Islam is practiced in Turkey and the way that it is practiced in Kurdistan. So there is some sort of political conflict up there, that there are rebels that either are in Turkey or go into Turkey, you know, cause their little mayhem, and then they retreat back into Kurdistan or into the Kurdish part of Iraq. And that's one of the issues there. And maybe we'll get some experts out there in another program to hopefully answer that question for you.
Okay, thank you much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
James, I've got you calling from Fort Lauderdale. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I listened to General Petraeus' report over the radio, and I didn't hear the part where he was insulted in the beginning, but I got a good taste of how he acted in the board, and I thought he acted very honorably. What made me upset was that the people who sat there at the board, you know, they can get upset and they can act badly, which they do most of the time. And General Petraeus sits there, and he answers responsibly. He doesn't act badly. He can't act badly. He's the one in the hot seat. And at the same time, he has to do the nearly impossible, which is defend the country, defend people in Iraq, defend people in different states in the area, and he can't act badly. And so he has to maintain his cool, his calmness, despite anything that he receives. And that makes me upset because of the sacrifice that he has to do in order to complete his job. And I don't know very many generals who don't act well. And I'm a Marine veteran, so I think that I think he acted very well. That's one point. Can I talk about another point?
Real quickly.
Okay. The other point is that it's usually not discussed. Some of the more important issues, which is oil in the area, and being in Saudi Arabia and trying to defend that country and trying to use oil at the same time is a very touchy subject. I don't know why we don't talk about that more during these conversations that we're having. And until that happens, I don't think we'll ever resolve it because we do need to get off of oil. We do need to stop depending upon it, and we do need to help those people in that area.
I totally agree, James. I want to thank you for your comments. It's another issue that we will bring up on another program. Thanks for calling Veterans Radio.
Hello?
Hi, Dwayne, calling from Indio, California.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I have a couple comments, one regarding many of the Arab countries supporting al-Qaeda. I think the reason they do that is because, not necessarily because they agree with al-Qaeda's, but rather because they're paying protection money. In other words, we'll give you millions of dollars a year if you keep the war off our soil and let us go about our business and not mind what we're doing. And the other point is, I think every time we fill up our gas-guzzling vehicles at the gas pump, we are indirectly supporting al-Qaeda, because that money, a lot of it goes to the Middle Eastern countries, who in turn take it and pay protection money to al-Qaeda. And as the previous caller just stated, I think until we break our addiction to Middle East oil and develop some alternative fuel sources, many of them, I don't think any one of them will make us independent, but we have to use our tremendous technological capability in this country to develop something. I mean, we put a man on the moon in 1969. Here we are, 2007. There must be something we can do to break our addiction to oil. Until we do that, we're going to be fighting this war and continuously, decade after decade, until we break that addiction.
I have a feeling I couldn't agree with you more, and I want to thank you very much for giving us a call here at Veterans Radio. Again, we got so many issues that we can have a whole other couple of shows on. Well, thanks very much for your call.
You're welcome.
Hi, Bill from Saline, Michigan. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that I thought that all the political parties, presidential and senatorial and congressional elections next year, if they use that debate that they gave on General Petraeus, they probably had all the campaign information they ever will need.
Yeah, more than likely. Can we throw them all out and start over again?
Wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Thanks very much, Bill. Appreciate it.
Okay, no, bye.
Bye. We've got Michael J. Martin on the line. Michael, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, Dave?
I'm doing fine. Welcome. Where are you right now?
I'm driving down the road going into Washington, D.C. My cell phone's ringing on the other phone.
I like your music.
I'll be right with him, yeah.
All right, what's your comment, Michael?
Well, I just wanted to agree along with what Gary was saying, you know, that I thought it was just deplorable that General Petraeus was called a liar before people even heard what he said, and then it was really difficult to catch what he said, because as soon as O.J. went on a rampage, that was the 24/7 news story. You know, it's so frustrating.
The news of the day. What's really important?
You know, I try to be an astute follower of what's going on, you know, so that I can have an informed opinion. Everybody's got an opinion, but I think that a person ought to at least take the responsibility of having an informed opinion, and it's very difficult the way the media treats these stories to be informed. But for people to just outright call him a liar and not even listen to what he had to say, I think that's just an outrage.
I think it was a big sign of disrespect, which is unfortunate. And, you know, we continually trying to teach our children respect for your elders, respect for authority and so forth. And then you have all of these, quote, senators and congressmen, you know, just taking off after a man who is doing his job. I mean, that's what he's doing. His job is to run a war. And
basic decorum would
right.
go a long way, you know, and basic respect. And they used to at least make the appearance of that in the Senate. But it's like the Jerry Springer show these days.
It does seem that way. Although I think when I was reading some information about the, you know, our founding fathers, they weren't very nice to each other, you know, but that wasn't done in public.
No, but they said sir to each other on the Senate floor, you know.
Yes, it's sort of like, you know, as an enlisted personnel talking to an officer, sir, in my opinion, you are.
Right, yeah, and that basic decorum, it makes communication a little easier. It expedites things like that when you're not insulting people while they're trying to testify.
There was
a move a couple of years ago, Michael J., I don't know if you remember it, that one of the senators was pushing for a Senate resolution to be more civil on the floor of the Congress.
It obviously didn't pass.
It didn't take effect, one of the two.
Well, it's you know, whatever you think about George Bush, the man does not conduct the office of the presidency in such a way that he's going around insulting people all the time. He's pretty gracious. He was gracious toward the Clintons when they would come by for a portrait unveiling or something like that. You know, he's always done that, and I've always appreciated that about him. And I wish that the people that are running for president right now would take that into concern. I'm talking about people from both parties that could use a lesson in that basic decorum.
Wow. But if you think back, though, all of the primaries have been mud throwing throughout the years, but once they get into the presidency and they're elected, then everybody is very nice to them,
and particularly each other.
Yes,
it's always been a tradition in the past for one former president not to badmouth the sitting president,
right.
And that decorum has gone out the window as well.
Yeah,
well, that's a little difficult. Well, thank you very much for your call, Michael J., and enjoy your
thank
time
you.
In Washington. Is Mr. Lilly still there?
Yeah, you want to talk to him?
I would like to talk to him just briefly.
All right.
When you coming back up here?
Oh, soon, I hope. I miss you guys.
Well, we miss you, too.
Here's Gary.
All right. Gary.
All right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Listen, we're coming up to the end of today's program, and I wanted you to kind of give us a synopsis of what's coming up next week. Can you do that for us?
Is it the helicopter show, or is it...
No, it's your return...
It's your return. Return to Nam.
Would you please take your medication?
Right, there you go. Give me my meds. Right now, there are three guys in Vietnam, two of them going back for the first time, and they're going back with another grunt who was there 16 times, Jim Doyle. Jim said that going back was, when he stepped off the plane, it was like the weight of 25 years had been lifted off his shoulders. So we're going to be interviewing those three guys, the one who's been back 16 times and the two that were going back to their old battlefields for the first time. And they'll be fresh back into the States by about 48 hours, and we're going to find out what their reactions were.
Okay, great. I think it's going to be a great program, and I appreciate that. Enjoy your reunion down there, buddy.
Thanks a lot. I am right now. I am so far. That's wonderful. Okay.
Drive home safe.
We'll do. I'm flying, actually. I decided to fly for the last minute.
Well, we'll see you Tuesday.
Okay, talk about the Battlefield Promises show. That's in the future.
We got it.
Okay.
Say goodbye now.
Bye.
Hey, we're running up against it.
There's one more thing I got to put in there real quick. The Battlefield Promise, or the helicopter show on the 13th of October. And the VVA is going to hold a pancake breakfast. It's going to be at the VFW on Wagner Road.
That's true. In Ann Arbor, we're going to be holding that program inside an old UH-1H Huey helicopter. I'm looking forward to that myself. I want to thank everybody for your calls today. I think it was great. We finally got everybody on the phone. It was really amazing that we did that. I want to thank all of our sponsors, the Marine Scholars Fund, Quantum Physical Therapy, Legal Help for Veterans, Len Pitlek, CPA, Schrader Yachts, Sperry Van Ness, Lillian Associates, and Pat the Handyman for sponsoring Veterans Radio. If you'd be interested in helping us out, give us a call. You've been listening to Veterans Radio. Until next week, you are dismissed.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of our guests and are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.